Hello everyone. So as promised, I'll be doing solos and interviews. Today is this podcast's first interview. Our first guest on the show is our Hyderabad's friendly monk, who is not only known for his supreme sense of patience, but also for his love for humanity and has worked with various communities from a very young age. You ask him for help and he never refuses, and he goes over and beyond to help you out. Although he denies to be a busy man, but let me be honest, super busy. It took me 2 months to get his date for this interview. Now, jokes aside, I think only people with so much of patience can deal with things that he deals with and with total calmness. Let us welcome none other than our Hyderabad's darling, Tashi Choru. Tashi, thank you so much for being here, man. It's such a pleasure to have you as my first guest. Welcome.
So how are you today?
I'm good. Little intimidated, I think, but good.
Oh, what made you intimidated?
In a nice way.
Alright. So, the first question would be, I'm sure our listeners would want to know. You've been into God and seeking answers for a very, very long time now. So how did it all start and what are the answers that you've been seeking?
I mean, I don't know if I was into God, but I certainly was into something more or less often associated with God in this world, I think. Religion or faith or belief in something higher in general. And that's been something what I've been grounded in from the time I was a kid. So there was no incident or there was no particular way I was introduced to it. I was more or less have been with it from the beginning, I think. I don't remember a time where I was introduced to it or someone introduced it to me. I always have this whatever connection towards faith, and that's something that I've indulged myself, and it indulged me, I think, for a longer period of time more than anything else in life. And in that sense, that also constantly changing and transforming, it has never been the same. I mean, and I don't think it's ever going to be the same, honestly, for that matter. That way, it's something that keeps me grounded, keeps me anchored to this life and to this world, I think, and everything that I does in this world, everything that I do in this world. So it's a continuous companion that way. Faith in general is a continuous companion that I always had, and that's something that's going to continue to be there, I think, no matter where I am or what I'm going to do. Am I seeking answers in it? I do not know, honestly. Rather, I think I'm always stumbled with many questions in the path rather than answers.
Okay.
And I think questions make more sense at times than answers itself. Answers can come later, I think, but to at least have a right frame of questions makes quite a lot of difference, I think, on the path. Any path that one is on.
Absolutely. I think one needs to know what sort of questions they need answers for. And once they have that determined, I think they can go looking for those answers. And that answers probably will also pop up by themselves. They'll manifest in this world.
I mean, unless you have the right question, you have the right frame of the question, and you are asking the question in a right time and a right way, you really can't see the answer even if it is there right in front of you. And essentially most of the faiths anyway believe that all the answers are within.
Yes, yes.
More or less all the faiths do believe that answers are within, I think. And even if they are there right within, for you to be able to realize that answer or see that answer, you need to have the question to be asked.
Absolutely, and I can't agree more. So in addition to looking for answers, seeking answers, you've always been associated with a lot of minority groups, a lot of communities, a lot of causes. Can you tell us a bit about what are the causes that you were associated with? I know a few, like you were a part of a farmers movement and others, etc. Can you just let us know a bit?
I always wanted to work with people in any capacity, I think.
Right.
I always enjoyed working with people that way, in my own way. And of course, once I got into college, I also happened to meet a lot of kind people, generous people who gave me time, space, and encouragement to do the kind of work that I want to do, I think. And I began my work with in Telangana with an organization, with a group of people who are working on farmer suicides, families where there are farmers committing suicides and suicides happened. And working with those families was the first work that I started, actually, the first work I engaged with. And from then, there were many issues that came. I mean, there was palliative care for a long time that I'm associated with one of the palliative care organizations in the city. And ours was the first department, in the, for that matter, even then in the United Andhra Pradesh or now in Telangana. There was palliative care, then there was housing rights, then there was land rights. In my own capacity, wherever, whatever, it's more like learning rather than actually working, I think, because I was constantly learning about these things. Because there's so much happening out there, I'm learning itself is quite a task, I think, rather than... I mean, definitely. In the process, of course, you're doing whatever you can, but you're more like absorbing the world out there, I think. Observing and absorbing both, I think. And that's what I was doing for a longer period of time. Even now, for that matter, I do that. So, there are plenty many issues that always are there. It's a difficult world, and in a difficult world, there are more challenges, more difficulties.
And I think this is a difficult time that we are living in. With the influx of social media, there's so many... So much of technology evolution, things are changing every single day.
Yeah, I think civilization, human civilization in general, always has that difficulty or challenge as part of its journey. There's no way of not having it, I think. And there's always that friction, there's always that conflict, and there's always going to be there, I think. It's how greatly or how skillfully we evolve to engage with that conflict is the more... of a thing rather than seeking a time where there is no conflict.
Agreed. Okay. Yeah, makes sense. So, while you were working with these communities, what are your takeaways, like, of the common sufferings, in if you were to put the general sufferings of people? I know there's a lot of inequality, there's a lot of, rich versus poor and stronger versus weaker, but in general, in a very human essence, what are the common sufferings of human beings? Like, how can you, if you want to put it,
I mean, now probably because of my Buddhist, I might come from a Buddhist perspective, but even back then when to look at, one can very clearly see, I think, if you are open, if you are willing to see what is there right in front of you, around you, that there is suffering around.
Yes, absolutely.
And, it's important for one to recognize that.
Right.
There is suffering, there is pain, there is grief, and they are there everywhere. There's no place, there is no person that you can point out and to say that they don't have it. I mean, doesn't matter how convoluted it is, how narrow it is, or how profound it is, how intense it is. It doesn't matter. It is not about quantifying it, but everyone does have it. There is
Absolutely.
Suffering everywhere. Everyone is going through some kind of suffering. But at the same time, of course, like, as much as there is everyone that is going through suffering, but there's also the bunch of people who are consciously or unconsciously creating that suffering
for others,
for themselves and for everyone else around.
Right.
And essentially, that kind of work or action by people is something sometimes people realize, but also sometimes people don't realize. But
I actually wanted to talk to you about that suffering that you just mentioned, that some people create for themselves and outside. What are those sort of sufferings, if you can just mention a few? Like, what exactly do you mean?
I don't know. I mean, like, if rich people are constantly working to make themselves better off and make themselves richer and more powerful, they're doing it, and they are probably even successful in doing that, no doubt about it. And they might think that they are, by doing all this, they are actually well off, and they are better, they are good, you know, they are untouched, they are powerful. Probably they are, no doubt about it, but are they actually, by being that powerful entities, are how much the way they are contributing and building the kind of society they are building, how much they are actually are untouchable, how much they are actually not vulnerable and not prone to suffering. I mean, that's something as simple as that one can look at the yesterday's news, I think. Cafe Coffee Day founder killing himself.
Such a sad news, yeah.
We all think people at that level are powerful, powerful rich, untouchable, not vulnerable by anything, and they're, you know, protected, taken care of, everything in every way. But that's not really true, is it? I mean, like, it
no,
is
not,
I think. And as much as they're trying to create powerful, rich world around themselves, people
Absolutely.
Forget to think and have the notion that they need to also continue to continuously contribute to building a world that is more kind, more compassionate, more loving. So whenever you need, you can rely on that world. When
Absolutely.
You are in a place of suffering, you can't
Absolutely.
Really rely just on your riches and power. It
No.
does only so much. You should be able to rely on kind, compassionate
Many
spaces
people,
that you create around you.
People around you.
And that kind of spaces we are not creating anymore, because we think rich and powerful is the only space. And that is the ivory tower I'm on and no one is going to touch me. But I don't think that is the reality. And that reality is encountered
true. So
every
true.
Day by most of us. But at end of the day, but we still pursue things that a larger world, rather even say a larger capitalistic market, asks us to pursue. That basically, like, I'm in Hyderabad now and I'm traveling back and forth whenever in the city, in the metro, in a bus stop, or anywhere. You're constantly being told by advertisements, hoardings, this, that, everything, that way, what you need to do with your life.
Absolutely.
And we all are constantly actually pursuing that.
Actually pursuing it. Not knowing that how detrimental it is for our lives.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you brought in a very interesting topic. You said how rich are only trying to be more rich or richer. And then they are not realizing that the world around them is, you know, suffering, and they don't want... In your Buddhist monastery in Bodh Gaya, you have a lot of famous and rich people coming in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who are they, and where do they come from? Like, in the is the notion of self awareness, wisdom, meditation, self care more in the Western? Because what you talk about is people who are coming from the West to seek more wisdom from India, and there are very less number of Indians who actually come to seek the wisdom from. The wisdom that was born out of India, some may say. So,
I mean, in Bodh Gaya or in Dharamsala or wherever there's any kind of, or even for that matter, not just Bodh Gaya and Dharamsala, I think I've seen people in Rishikesh, Haridwar, all kind of spiritual spaces, that places are considered to be spiritual places. There are people who have been coming from far away,
mm-hmm.
far, far away, going through difficult journeys. I mean, some of them would change 3 flights, 4 flights to get to the place where they want to get to. And that is something amazing, I think, in one sense. But also, West, I mean, one cannot talk about West in that unified sense of there's one single West. There's no one single West that
right,
way also.
Right.
I mean, but also
outside
anything
India.
Outside the Asian... Indian subcontinent or Asian faith tradition or spiritual tradition, there are people who are constantly have been coming here for a long time. I think this is not the first time people are coming, but of course now the number has grown up. There are a lot more people who come in here seeking that as much as simply put it in a very plain terms is wisdom, I think,
right?
You know, or seeking that like answers as plainly, or seeking something that gives them purpose, contentment, happiness, or
nice.
Helps them in their journey, as simple as that, I think,
right.
whatever on whatever path they are on. So I see plenty of people who come from plenty many different countries to this country, and then of course people in this very own country won't really care for the rich traditional historical wisdom this country has generated in course of centuries. But that's also because there is West that has gotten to a point where there's a, I mean, I don't think it's still a peak point of materialism, but materialism got into a high point, and where people seek some way out of that materialism, to make reason out of that materialism.
Got saturated, you mean?
Yeah, right? And then they come here, I think, but Indians, all Asians for that matter, not all Asians, I think, but mostly, even as I speak of India, we are constantly aspiring to be advanced, aspiring to be rich, powerful, technologically advanced, more developed, and more developed essentially for a major part of this country or even this country's government, Mm-hmm. Developed essentially means the economy,
right,
the technology, technological advancement,
dollar buildings,
the industries, infrastructure. This is development, but
fancy cars.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm not sure how much is that actually is. I mean, development is development in what sense?
Right.
I mean, we are far away from even actually contemplating what kind of development are we seeking. And there's a set notion of development, and that you're all running for that development, I think. States, governments, people, individuals, everyone, I think. And everybody's in that rush. And there's, of course, there's a bunch of people who seen that development and seen that technological advancement, that everything in the West, and see how much it is actually not helping them to be happy, as simple as that.
Absolutely.
And they seek it elsewhere, and they do that. It's not that West doesn't have that wisdom, I think. West also has seen great philosophers and great teachers.
Yes,
you go seek out elsewhere because things get to a point in your place where you can't really look at anything else other than this mad development.
Well said. So coming back, I know you've taken up Buddhism a couple of years ago now, and it didn't go very well with your parents when you broke the news to them. Right? So how, what was your reaction and what was their reaction rather?
I mean, I did not have any reaction because I was not expecting my parents to be, well, how should I put it exactly, not to be
welcoming
about it or encouraging about it.
Yes.
Because they are typical middle-class Telugu-speaking Indian parents with single child who had certain aspirations for their child, essentially, which means a stable career, marriage, children. That's the scenario and setup and that they always had in their heads about their children, I think. And suddenly to see that, I mean, rather it is not suddenly, I think, because I've never really did fit into that bill of
yes,
expectations. And as a child, as a person in a family, I don't tick almost any box.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't tick any box. There is no conventional education, there is no conventional career, there is no mainstream, you know, success as a notion with me, and there is
mm-hmm.
no regular,
societal,
every commoner's life.
Yeah, society fixed boxes that
I've never ticked any of those boxes.
Right.
And I can imagine, like any parents, they would be thrown away, not feel not nice, good or pleasant about it, and they'll be challenged and
insecurities,
all kind of things. No, I mean insecurities at one point, but also fear about their own child, what
right,
they are going to do in their life, where they're getting, and what does it mean to them in their life. I mean, how are they going to live alone in the context of alone, because you're not married, do not have children, you do not have family in that sense.
Right.
So that's always, I mean, like any other parents, they are challenged with all that, and they have to continue to be.
Definitely.
I mean, I don't expect them to get it because they come from a different world and they live in a different world. And I live in an entirely different world, which I know for a matter of fact.
Right.
There's no way of me expecting them to suddenly get what I am doing. It's a decade now, I think. Me constantly surprising them, I think, or rather say me being the difficult child. But that's it, I'm the difficult child, but that doesn't make them any less of being parents. So if anyone asks me how my parents are doing, I would say they are being parents. As simple as that.
Yes, I heard that the other time and it was so funny. They're being parents.
They've been told. I mean, they've been told by their parents, their grandparents, that this is how you are a parent. This is how you raise your children. This is how you aspire for your children. This is how you want your children to be. And they're exactly doing that. They are being
yeah,
taught to do this in one or the other sense, but not in a formal
in
education
society
institution.
Too.
Yeah, they're conditioned and they're taught. They are given only this kind of narrative and this kind of existence, which is possible.
Anything other than the mainstream as...
It's not even a possibility.
It's
not about
number,
right or
yeah,
wrong. It's not about it is accepted or not accepted. It is doable, not doable. It is not possible.
Doesn't come into their gambit
it is
of
not a reality.
Reality.
It is not
yes,
a reality. It is anything that falls out of this line is basically an illusion.
Right.
And your child is living in an illusion, and you try do your best as a parent to get them out of it.
Wake your child up.
Even if you need to be violent, if you need to be aggressive, but of course, that all is done in the name of love.
Love.
And it's people, I mean, I think one thing I realized, the amount hate as a general notion, the general public, most of the public, whether you're educated, not educated, you believe in faith, you believe in Buddhism, or you believe in your own faith, Hinduism or Christianity, or you're an atheist, doesn't matter. You agree that hate is something which is not good. Anger,
definitely.
Hate is something that is not good. We all agree.
Definitely.
Or at least hate, if not anger. We'll say hate is not a good thing. It's not a nice thing to have.
It's not constructive.
Towards anyone, basically. So then, even if we have hate at some point of time towards a particular person, particular incident, particular situation, particular organization, we tend not to act on the hate.
Right.
Because there is some kind of publicly and socially acceptable notion that hate is not good.
Right.
So then you don't act on your hate. You might have hate in your heart, in your mind, but you don't act it out. Fair enough. But then there is something else. You claim love on many things. On many
mm-hmm.
people, many situations, we claim love.
Mm-hmm.
And when you claim love about something, about someone, about some situation, you feel entitled to do anything on the name of that love. You can be as plain as that, forcefully marry your child to someone because you love them and you know what is good for them. You can house arrest them and tell them what they need to study because you love them and you know what is best for them.
Right.
You can... you know, dictate someone's entire life and existence because
mm-hmm.
you love them.
Mm-hmm.
And it is easy to do
mm-hmm.
things on the name of such kind of love. And it is acceptable. It is encouraged. It is acceptable. It is celebrated in a very simpler, realistic way in this world, I think.
Right, right.
And people do that. And it is much more easy to do the things that you want to do as soon as you label it love.
Absolutely.
Rather than, yeah, you don't need to do anything on hate now anymore. You do, I mean, people in this country do things because they love their country.
They love their country.
You can go kill other country people, other soldiers, whatever armies, because you love your country. You can kill people of other faith because you love your faith. You can, you know, kill someone from other caste because you love your caste, your honor, your family,
daughter,
your daughter,
your
and
son.
Everyone.
Yes.
I mean, you... You can do more violence in this world on the name of love than on the name of hate, I think. And
just
that,
don't call it hate. Give it love.
Yeah.
Because you love yourself, you're killing the other person.
Yeah. I mean, that...
this problem is solved.
And in all their senses, that love is actually true for them. I love my faith. I love my country. I love my children. I love my family. I love my caste, my beliefs. I mean, there is for them, this is a reality.
There's a flip side. They hate everyone else.
I mean, it's not even, it's not even, I don't think they look at it as hate, I think. They would look at it rather, I am being protective of my loved ones. I'm being protective of my love. That
mm-hmm.
could be my faith, my people, my family, my notions. Doesn't matter. I'm being protective of my love. I mean, and then you can do anything on that love, even to people you love.
Right.
Or people
right.
whom you do not love, on the name of being protective. I mean, that's interesting, I think, but also because that comes from the convoluted notion of what we think love is, I think, in general. And that's a problematic thing in this kind of world. We are
Absolutely.
Doing everything in the name of love, and
Absolutely.
That way there's no conversation around it.
Definitely.
I mean,
so true, so true. Everybody starts to think that they're, the self-righteousness that
yeah.
they have, that they possess, that I know what I'm doing is right.
Yeah.
I was very well depicted in one of the movies recently that Amir Khan had made called Superstar.
Okay.
It was shown of a particular religion, but I'm pretty sure it exists throughout all the religions and all the castes where the fathers or the mothers, the parent as such, knows what is best for their child. They get them, like you said, they get them married to the particular person, like arranged marriages. For,
yeah.
I mean, so... Well, point. Well said, yeah. Thanks for that. It's already a few minutes and we have dived so deep into the conversation. So, these sufferings, now people who force other people are the perpetrators, or perpetrators can be a very strong word, but then people who push other people to do something, but there are also the other side where people have to suffer because of these people, the other people who oppress them or force them to do things. And they go through a lot of struggle mentally because they come from a position of weak. As a child or as a society, as a student, they come from a place of weakness. and they go through a lot of mental disturbance. So, I mean, I'm going to do a lot of podcast series about mental health issues, but what is it that we need to see in both sides? We can't just see people who oppressed and start talking to them, stop oppressing. We need to tell people who get oppressed as well. We need to give them means to take care of themselves, to struggle through, to fight through, to stand up to those oppressors. Even oppressor is probably, I mean, people who listen to as a father, if a father listens to me saying an oppressor, he might feel offended. I'm not saying that person is an oppressor. I'm saying a strong person and a weak person. Now, the weak person goes through mental health. Do you have any sort of help or tips or how to cope?
I mean, well, there is suffering. I think no one denies that. No one denies the fact that there is suffering in this world, and there is suffering in one's life, and there is suffering all around. No one denies that. That's true. But of course, well, Buddhism says that we are creators of our own suffering.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's true. No doubt about it. But for me, coming from a sociopolitical background and context, and connecting it with faith, I do see two things here. One is, of course, there are two things that need to be focused here, I think. One is the mind, the state of mind of the particular individual.
Right.
In the context. And there is a state of mind of a larger being at work, which I call society.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, for me, from where I stand and look at it, is society is a very organic, larger being for me. It's constantly growing, evolving, changing, but also it has a say. As a society, we have a say.
Mm-hmm.
As a society, what we have a say is, even if it is inflicting suffering on myself,
mm-hmm.
it still has a say, and I still buy that what society has to say, because
definitely.
That is a society I live in. That is a society that I depend on. So, and it is a society essentially that it works on many levels, on many things, but also it works by relying on power and notion of power.
Right.
And there is powerful, there's powerless in every context, in every situation. There's always that. I mean, all our relationships, all our existence works on that notion of power. There's always a powerful being in our life, whether it is state, government, as simple as that, or whether it is parents when you're a child, or whether it is husband when you're married, or whether it is your boss when you're working in your office, or whether it is as simple as a police person on the street when you're a commoner, or whether it is rich neighbor that living next to you, there is always a powerful entity in your place. And that entities again have powerful entities.
Definitely.
And we all operate in that structure of power, in a very structural, systematic setup of that power.
Right.
And we all need to live in the dictated lines of that power.
Absolutely.
And when you challenge that power, it is, of course, even before you challenge the power, I think the ones in the power are constantly trying to make sure that power remains intact.
Right.
At least to begin with, or it becomes more powerful. To aspire it to be more powerful, or at least to begin with, it need to be intact. It need to be taken care of. That power need to live through and survive and sustain.
Right.
To keep the system going on. And we all live in that kind of system, nonetheless. And we all are subject to that power. And we are all also, so we are subjected to that power, and also we are people who subject someone else to that power.
Absolutely.
We all have that kind of screwed up setup, I think, in that sense. No one is an escape from that. No one can escape from that. So one thing you address on a larger level, that power. What does this power mean?
Yes.
What can it be? What is it doing? What is it not doing? And how is it harming? What kind of society is it building and creating? And do I want this kind of power in place?
Right.
Do I want to operate through a system and structure of power?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want to operate through a system and structure of love, compassion, kindness, and equality? All these things, as much as they are all whatever nice fancy notions we think they are, how
it
much they are realities in our life,
or
how much power is the actual reality in our life?
Yes.
That is something we need to all look into. But then the other way, if we are addressing the individual, talking to the individual, engaging with the individual, Well, of course, understanding and acknowledging the person is going through what they are going through is important for themselves, for us to acknowledge it, and for their person to acknowledge it themselves that we are going through a difficult time. And there's no one single way of addressing it, I think, because there's no one single thing that causing this particular suffering, I think. As much as we all like to point out one cause for our suffering, I don't think that's a reality. I mean, of course, the one thing might trigger it, but I think suffering itself in our life as a larger thing is dependent on many things.
Right.
And it's not one single thing, I think. And when that is a kind of is a reality in our life, there's no one single thing that can address it. There's no one single therapy session. There's no one single, you know, motivational whatever thing, or there's no one single faith. It can't work that way, I think. It again goes back to the question, at an individual level, how do I address the individualist point? But again, as an individual, what kind of mechanism, as individuals, the one in the place who is suffering, the one place who is helping out, how do we create a space that we all can rely on? How do we create a space that we can take care of each other?
Absolutely.
And nurture each other and protect each other and feel safe with each other.
Right.
And that kind of space is something what we don't have, because we are all busy in creating powerful spaces. We are not wanting or willing to create spaces that are kinder and compassionate, because kindness and compassion is also, world has come to a point where they look at them as a weaker notions.
True.
And you look at, when you're constantly in a place where you want to create powerful notions, and you think that power also protects you.
True.
So, and that is something that need to be challenged and also changed, I think, but also it's a long work. But meanwhile, while we do that, I think the task is take care of someone as much as you can. Be there for someone who is in not a good state of mind, as simple as that. I mean, you don't need to provide solutions. You don't need to do anything. Be simply present. Be simply there. And give them the assurance that you are there. As simple as that, if one is able to do that, and that's great, I think. And that itself is challenging for the world we live in, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. People generally don't know that there is someone who would care for them genuinely. That everybody doubts the other person. There is no more that, oh, I can go to this person and talk to this person without being judged, without being, you know, subject to scrutiny, or without being looked at in a different shade.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, very important point when you just said that, yes, we need to ensure that people around us know that there is an ecosystem that we are trying to build, where you can come and be yourself, talk, and just don't talk, whatever it is, just be comfortable.
And I think at simpler level, for me, how can I tell someone that I'm there for you? I need to learn that. I need to constantly learn that.
That is so,
and
so
because it important. Doesn't come easily, it doesn't happen just like that out of nowhere. I need to consciously, willingly learn how empathetically and how realistically and genuinely I can tell someone and actually have them actually believe that actually I am there for you. As simple as a statement, I am there for you. How do I learn to say that?
Absolutely.
And the other person also need to learn, when you hear someone saying that, how to trust it.
Definitely.
It's a constant learning for all of us, I think. One who is suffering, one who is not suffering. But anyway, I don't think there's anyone who is not suffering in the world.
Everybody is
so
suffering at some level.
We all need to realize that, I mean, as Buddhist, in Buddhism, we say one simple reality we ask all of us to constantly remind, our teachers constantly say to remind, is that there is no single being in this world that wants suffering. And there is no single being in this world that doesn't want happiness.
True.
That is
so
as
true.
Simple as a common connection with everyone else that lives around you. From
absolutely.
A single cell organism to, I think, multicellular organisms and multi-organ organisms, there's no one who wants suffering. And there's no one who wants not to have happiness, not to be happy. Everyone
very
wants
true.
To be free of suffering, and everyone wants to be happy. And this is what, once you realize that, I think it makes so much of a difference. How you connect, how you relate, how you look at other people, how you look at your own self for that matter. Changes so much, I think.
Absolutely. Very well said. So, yeah, adding on to it, I was just thinking, what is your take on spiritualism and religion? Mm-hmm. And would you encourage people to try it Because my father keeps saying, if nothing works out, faith does. When nothing works out, faith does. And I think it, at some level, at many levels, in fact, it is very true, because when all your doors start shutting on you, and I'm sure everybody goes through that particular phase, you start believing, you need to have that hope. You need to have that belief that there is something beyond your comprehension, that it's going to intervene at one point in time. And like they say, foresight is not 2020, hindsight is always 2020, right? So when you look back upon what has happened, you say, oh, this is why it has happened, right? So what is your take on spiritualism, and would you encourage people to, you know, find and seek answers and use the empathy and love as factors that we have to make this world a better place?
I mean, I agree, when everything doesn't work, faith works. But when I say I agree with that, I also mean I look at faith over there in a different context, I think. When nothing is working in the world, in your life, having that faith in anything, whatever that might be, I think there's something that anchors, you know. There's something that you can hold on to. I mean, I can have that faith. If I'm a scientist, I would have that faith on my science.
Right.
If all my experiments are failing, I still have that, whatever, even a single glimpse of faith on my science. You know,
true.
I keep trying. So there's that faith.
True.
If I'm an academic person, I have that faith in my philosophy that I'm studying.
Right.
If I can have that faith on the family, biological, non-biological, nonetheless, I can have that faith on my friends. I can have that faith on my workplace. I mean, that faith is something huge and vast, and it can encompass so much.
Sure.
And you don't need to have that faith only with one single thing.
True.
But to have that faith on anything, in a time where you are in despair, where you are hopeless, to still have that faith makes so much of a difference, I think. And
absolutely,
that faith could be on anything, I think, kind of. Not necessarily on religion. Some people it is religion, some people it is some kind of spirituality, for some people it's something else entirely, and that is perfectly fine. But I think we all are beings of faith. We all have faith in something.
True.
We won't exist and survive and live and do things in life that we do if you do not have faith on something. As much as that, if I am going to a movie this weekend, I have faith on the director or the cast of that movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes,
I have faith in them that they actually have created something nice, and I'm going to go enjoy it. So if I have faith in Buddhism, the faith is that Buddha has said something 2,500 years back and 600 years back. I think that is relevant to me till date, and that is going to help me in some way, and that is something I can rely on, and I have that faith. So,
right.
I mean, there is faith in the materialistic world, there is faith in the spiritual world, there is faith everywhere. But the whole point is that what do I have my faith is what matters, I think.
Right.
We all are beings of faith, no matter what we are, what we are doing, not doing. But what do I root my faith in?
Right.
And that essentially makes a difference. How much is that faith is helping me and not helping me?
Mm-hmm.
I can put my faith on anger, like most parents these days do. The only way of disciplining my child is through anger. And there's that unsaid or unspoken faith in anger. Most of them think that it helps them.
Right.
But does it actually help or not helps is
right.
something else. So the point is not about having faith, not having faith. What do you have faith in is the point.
True.
Is it anger that you have faith in? Is it love you have faith in? Or is it the neighbor that you have faith in? Or is it someone else that you met on internet, worlds apart,
right,
timelines apart? Is that
right.
someone you have faith on? I mean, like, who is that you keep your faith in is what makes a difference, I think. And I keep my faith in, as much as I keep my faith in Buddhism, I keep my faith in plenty many other things in the world. I keep my faith in my friends, my colleagues that I used to work with, my fellow activists. In general, I try and have that faith on almost all the people I meet.
Right.
All the situations I live through. Because what I've realized in my life, if I do not have that faith, at least as simple as the benefit of doubt that I can have faith on this person. Like, I take an auto from your place today to go to the place where I need to go. I need to have faith on this auto driver that he's going to drive and make me reach my destination safe. If I do not have that faith...
So this works on such a subconscious level, that
it does,
faith.
No, I need to, like,
And sometimes we don't. Sometimes we look at someone and we can say that I can't have faith in this person, which is fine.
Right.
Then you safeguard yourself, protect yourself, and you do what is necessary to take care of yourself in the process. So you faith as a concept, as complex, as profound it is at one level, it is as simple as it in our everyday life, I think.
Right.
And that need to be looked at that way. You need to begin looking it that way, I think. And do I encourage people to go out? I mean, try spirituality, different kind of spiritualities, different kind of religions and faiths and all that. If that is something you want to try, try. But I would say, like religion, religion is an organized faith and a faith in certain thing.
Right.
Science is also an organized faith, I would say, end of the day. They're organized around certain principles, certain beliefs, and there's a faith in those beliefs. And of course, there might be disagreements between religion and science. That's a different thing altogether, I think. But religion is an organized institution, and the institution is organized around faith, and that faith is on rooted on different things. Different religions have those faith rooted on different things.
Mm-hmm.
And one need to understand when you want to approach religion or faith for that matter, faith that is essentially institutionalized, when you want to engage with it, you need to understand that this is an institutionalized thing. It's an institution in itself. It works in a certain way, and that it has been constructed, developed, created by humans in a long course of history. Doesn't matter how old the institution it is.
Yes.
It still has flaws. It still has problematic notions and things that you might not agree with everything in it.
So you need to be cognizant of those flaws and just...
You simply cannot go there wanting to seek all the answers.
Right.
You can go there with an open mind that there is something there.
Correct.
And I just want to check if that something that is there is going to help me or not.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to serve my purpose or be any relevant to my existence or not? If it is, great. You dwell into it, you figure out what works, what doesn't work, you engage what you need to engage, and you step back what you don't, what you can't engage with. You need to do all that. But you need to end of the day go with open mind that there is something that I want to engage with.
Right.
It is not, you can't go with a mindset that I am seeking answers and I want to find my answers here.
Right, right. Absolutely.
It's like anything that you do in your life.
Right.
Your new job, your new college, first day in the college, you have difficulties, you have problems, you have challenges, and you don't like certain things, which is fine. You don't need to like everything to work with it. I remember one of my teachers used to say, if you have headache, you don't cut off your head. You treat it.
You treat it.
You deal with it. You figure out what to do with it. Simply, if you have problems with religion and faith, you deal with it. You engage with it. You don't just cut it off and say it is not working.
Yes.
Then that way there's a problem with the entire institution of family, institution of education.
Everything.
Which institution doesn't have problem and challenges in it? And why do you want to just get rid of it? You don't want to.
You brought such a beautiful topic right now.
I mean, you don't want to get rid of it. It doesn't work that way. So
it's
you
so true.
Work with it. You deal with it. And of course, no doubt, religion has been discriminating. Religion has been challenging. Religion has been violent. Like, but which institution has not been violent? Which institution has not been discriminatory in the world? I mean, point out to one and tell me, then we'll think we can discard religion and faith also. Or faith in the religion. But that's it. That also means when you have faith, like this is for everyone who is engaging with certain kind of faith, or this is someone who's wanting to engage with a certain kind of faith, I think one need to be very clear, being part of some faith, being part of a religious group, being part of a spiritual group, necessarily or actually never doesn't mean not questioning it.
Yeah, you brought two very, very important points here. One is blind faith and the other one is compassionate. If every party involved who is going for seeking answers, they need to be critical of, not overcritical, critical as in...
My faith requires me to be critical.
Absolutely.
There can't be no faith of which you can't be critical about.
Absolutely.
Because you're constantly engaging with that faith. You arrive at a point of faith only by being critical with it.
Definitely.
You can't.
So you can't have blind faith.
As much as everyone attributes to Buddha saying that, you know, do not believe in my teachings blindly, check them like a goldsmith checks gold before deciding the quality of it. And you simply check, analyze my teachings before you arrive at a conclusion to rely on them or not rely on them. You do not listen to them just because I say them. And simply that is applicable to everything, I think. to our own faith. Just because I believe in certain kind of faith doesn't mean I need to give in myself completely in a way where I have no critical thinking left out. No Absolutely. Analyzing, no questioning, no challenging the notions. I mean, those are essentially what make us thinking rational beings. And that critical thinking is important of everything in our life.
Absolutely.
And the critical thinking essentially doesn't mean trying to prove someone right, someone wrong. It is about to see what is right in the given context and situation for you.
Right.
What works for you, what doesn't work for you. Sometimes I can't rationalize certain things.
Absolutely.
I mean, does that mean that's completely nonsense? I don't think
Maybe
so.
Maybe not.
For me, probably it is. I can't rationalize it because my rationality itself is constantly growing and evolving. It has limitations. It has flaws. I am not this rational being where my rationality has answer for everything in the world. It doesn't. So it's important to understand our own limitations when we are engaging with faith, and also important to understand the limitations of the faith itself that we are engaging in, because the faith exists
wow.
in this world
yes.
and faith has limitations. So wow. engage with what you want to engage, but not because you believe it has every answer in it, but because you think it has something to offer. As simple as that. And that is a journey for all of us with any faith that we want to engage with.
Absolutely. Wow. Wow, it's been absolute pleasure talking to you in such a profound discussion. And I definitely, I know for sure that we're going to keep continuing to spread love and empathy that is there. And we just need to figure out how to do it and how strategic can we be. How skillful can we be. Thanks for taking time out. Really, really appreciate you taking time out during your vacation. And I know you're one of your closest friends is coming down in, down today. Thanks again, Tashi.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for doing this.
Pleasure.